This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
What up, Grizz Nation? Welcome to the Ethos Grizzlies podcast. This is your host, Isaac Simpson. And do me a favor, go over to at Ethos Grizzlies. Give us a like and a follow. We definitely appreciate that. You can find me on the Twitter/X app at Isaac_NBA. And you can find my co-host, Candace, at CandaceH901. Got a very special guest joining me today, man. If you're a member of Grizz Twitter, the draft community, man, got an OG along with myself, man. We've been in this thing for a long time, man. I remember going back when I had my radio show back at AM 730 back in the day. The man came and joined me in the studio one morning, man, and that's when I first met Chip, man. He's a great guy, man. Definitely knows his stuff. Man, you can find him on Twitter at Chip Williams Jr., and he joins me now, man. Chip, how you doing?
Man, I'm doing great, Isaac. It's always good to chat with you. Like you said, we've been doing this a pretty long time at this point. So it's always good to talk some ball. And, you know, this is my favorite time of the year when the draft rolls around. So excited for this. I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, no problem, man. Yeah, man. It feels like that was 100 years ago now, man. I can't. It's crazy, man. How long that feels like it was ago. But yeah, man, I'm with you, man. Draft is definitely one of my favorite times of the year, and I love breaking out these prospects, man. And let's just get right into it, man. First, just looking at this draft, it's been talked about and perceived as a bad draft. And I always, being a draft guy, I always hate when people say that. I understand when you look at the top of this draft, it doesn't really have the franchise changing players per se, but I think this draft is super deep. Like I don't agree it's a bad draft. There's a lot of people that are like, well, I don't even want to pick in this draft. I'm going to trade out. Nobody, there's no talent in this draft, and I don't agree with that at all. I think all the way down to deep in the second round, man, this draft is full of rotation players. Like I said, people use the term top heavy. I call it bottom heavy. I think there are some players at the top in the lottery that I think have the potential, if they reach their ceiling, to kind of be those all-star level type players. I think they're awesome guys, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But the depth of this draft, I think it's really good, man. What are your thoughts on the draft overall?
Yeah, I understand, I guess, why people would say it's a weaker draft. It's a bad year if you need to find – like the franchise piece to build around, right? Like,
exactly. Yeah.
You know, I guess it depends on your opinion of like an Alex Saar, or Ron Holland, or Risa Shea, yeah, or some of these guys. I don't view them as like franchise changing players, but I completely agree with what you're saying that this draft has a lot of talent, and it's a good year to be in a situation like the Memphis Grizzlies are in, where they've got their guys, right? They've got Bane, Ja, Jaren. They've got their stars. Now you're doing what you can to fill out the roster with the best complementary pieces. And I know everyone expects when you have the ninth pick that you're going to be drafting a future all-star, but that may not be the case this year. But I think you can really find a guy, you know, who slots maybe somewhere 4 through 7 in your rotation, and a guy that you're going to have on a good contract with team control for up to 9 years if you include the extension. And so that, from a Grizzlies perspective, it's exciting. It's a good draft. You should be able to find someone to fit into your rotation and help you out pretty quickly. But I get what people are saying, right? There's no Wimby. There's no Zion. There's no Ja. There's no even Cade Cunningham, guys like that. So I understand where that thought comes from, but I lean more with you where I don't agree with it, because there is a lot of talent in this draft. And I think it's disingenuous to be that dismissive of an entire draft to say, hey, it's weak, don't even worry about this year, because it's not true. There's a lot of guys that I really like in this draft.
Yeah, we're talking with Chip Williams Jr. here on the Ethos Grizzlies podcast. Yeah, I agree, definitely. I think, and for the Grizzlies, from a Grizzlies perspective and viewing it through that prism, I know a lot of people were disappointed when they failed a nine in this lottery. I mean, I know a lot of people were thinking about getting Donovan Clingan, which I was a big fan of that. I was a really pro Donovan Clingan guy. I think there is an outside path that he gets there to nine. I definitely wouldn't bank on it at all. I think there are too many landmines. I think somebody ends up snatching them up before they get to nine. But I think it's better than a 0% chance. I think that he is there at nine to the Grizzly fans out there who are big fans of Donovan Clingan. But as you said, I think for the Grizzlies' perspective, I think this is kind of house money, because we all know this team, if they were healthy last year, that wasn't for the Ja suspension and all the kind of things that went down, this team would not be in a lottery. This is not a true lottery team. As you said, they have their defined roles and guys that are already set in their rotation. So if you can find a player here that can actually help you, I think it's a plus. And I think there's a lot of different ways they can look at this. You can go for a player that I think that it helps you now. I'm not a huge fan of them taking a guy that's going to be a project, because I don't think they have – we've gone through that with a lot of wings that they've drafted that they end up not working out. I think they're past that point, especially when you have two young guys in Gigi and Vince Williams Jr. that you've kind of locked up on fantastic contracts that you're trying to develop and get playing time for. When you're a team that's competing for a championship, I'm not one – I know some people disagree with this – notion. I'm not one that wants to have a lot of developmental pieces, because I just think if you draft a guy that's a project, they're not gonna play a lot, and you're gonna have to end up sending them down to South Haven. And I'm just not a fan of that. At this point, I think you kind of past that. I would like to get a player that could help now at least a little bit and be part of your rotation, like you said at the top. And I think that's kind of how you're viewing this, or even possibly trading out or trading down and picking up a veteran piece. I think that's kind of how I would be viewing it. But let's stick up to the top of the draft. Alexander Sarr is pretty much the consensus number one pick. There are some people that have Richard Shea going number one overall, and I guess we'll talk about that in just a second. Alex Sarr, 7'1", put on some weight, man. They had him, I think, listed at 217, weighed out at 224 at the combine. Didn't put up great numbers in athleticism. I was kind of disappointed in his numbers, man. He didn't grade high too much higher than Zach Edey and Donovan Clingan as far as some of the athletic stuff. That was a little bit surprising to me. I don't know if that was more of he just wasn't really taking it seriously, because when you watch it on film, that's not what you see at all. But Alexander Sarr, for me, I think a lot of people feel like he's going to be a big-time contributor year one. I'm not exactly sold on that. I think he's more of a project. I think he'll help you on the defensive end more year one than he will offense. His offensive game is still a work in progress. Like, he hadn't been playing basketball that long, so he's still kind of learning on the fly. But you see all the tools there, man, the measurables, the athleticism. I think he has the potential to be a lead defender, defensive player of the year type player at some point in his career. Kind of looking at Alexander Sarr, man, what are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you said. He's kind of this model that everyone wants, right? This mold of big man that in time, as his body continues to develop, as he continues to age, he should be able to, you know, play against some of the bigger centers and give them trouble. But at the same time, he's got this really unique mobility for someone his size, similar to, you know, what you saw from Jaren at Michigan State or Evan Mobley when he was at USC. I'm with you. I think the combine numbers maybe don't do full justice to the athlete that you see when you watch him play. And I like him. I haven't solidified my board yet. He's up there for me. I don't know he'll be number one for me, but I understand why he's number one and why it seems like a lot of people think the Hawks are going to take him number one. Because if the offense develops, which I agree, it's a project and it's going to take some time, but I think the defense is pretty ready to help, at least in his rookie year. And if he starts to be able to put some of the stuff that he shows flashes on film on, a little bit of the playmaking, a little bit of the shooting, some of the touch that he's got near the basket, like, you start to see the outline of, like, okay, this is a guy that maybe not a number one on a title team, but someone that you can really view as a core piece to help you win for a really long time. So, yeah, he's not, you know, he's not the Wimby, he's not the Zion, he's not this can't miss prospect, but he's a really good prospect. And I think I'm very high on his potential, you know, as he gets into the league.
Jewelry can say many things on your wedding day. As a wedding band, it can say, "This is a forever symbol of our forever love." As a gift to your wedding party, it can say, "Thanks for standing up there with us." Blue Nile can help you find the piece that says it all and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah, I think Jaren Jackson Jr. is actually a great comp for him. That's a lot of, he's gotten that comp a lot. I can definitely see that in his game. I definitely agree that he's going to be, I think he can help you defensively year one. Like I said, the offense is a work in progress, but you see those flashes. I mean, he's the prototype of the modern day NBA big and what you'd want. I think he's a power forward right now because he needs to put on, they can put on a little bit more weight and add a little bit more strength. But as he developed, kind of the same trek they had Jaren Jackson Jr. on. It started off as a power forward, and I think the idea was that he'd eventually evolve to be able to play some center. I think that's exactly what you're looking at with Alexander Starr. So I think of the guys in this draft, there are only a few guys that I kind of put on this list of guys that if they reach their ceiling, I think they could be that all-star level player, and I think he's definitely near or at the top of that list in this class if there are any guys that ends up being that. So I think that's kind of the reason why you mostly see him up at the top of this draft. I think if Atlanta takes him, I think they're getting a really good project. Like you said, I don't know if he's a franchise player, but I definitely think he could be all-star level player and a guy that could be in all defensive teams, possibly win defensive player of the year at some point. But again, we're talking with Chip Williams Jr. here on the Ethos Grizzlies podcast. You look at Zachary Richardson, is a foreign prospect. And there's another guy, Tijon Sulon, who, when I watch them, I have them really close. And Richardson, it's weird because Richardson is all over the place. Like, you see him, there's some mocks have him going number one overall, and some have him number two. I've seen him even down at 10, 11, 12. He's kind of a polarizing prospect. When you look at those two players, I think Richardson is farther along. I think in his development, I think Sulon is more of a project at this point. But when I project going forward, if I had to put a ceiling on both of those guys, I think I would actually take Sulon. I think his athleticism kind of sets him apart. Not that Richardson is a bad athlete, but Sulon is more explosive. He's more above the rim. And I think they do a lot of things. They're very similar. I think in a lot of things they do, but I think that athleticism for me kind of sets Sulon apart. If I was in a lottery, I would take Richardson number two. If I could find a way to get Sulon, if those were the type of guys I was locked in on, I think I would try to find a way to get Sulon. It's weird because if you had asked me 4 or 5 months ago, Richardson was my top prospect. I had him over Sarr. Man, I was a big Richardson guy, and he really had a point where he really struggled. I mean, he was bad. His shooting is something that you really liked, and he wasn't shooting the basketball well. He just had couple months there where, man, he was really struggling. Now, he's come around more as of late, but he's kind of shot back up boards. He had dropped down pretty much on everybody's board. Now he's back up number one, number two on a lot of boards, man. When you look at those two guys, what are kind of your thoughts on Richesay versus Soulon and their prospects going forward?
Yeah, really good question. It's two unique guys. I think if I was going to just kind of bottom line it and then I'll expand on it, I would say that Richesay probably has a clear path where if he doesn't hit the high-end outcome, I still buy that he's a 10-year-plus NBA veteran, because I just think that if he doesn't get significantly better than he is now, I buy a 3-and-D level wing.
Yeah,
he's a pretty good defender. Right, pretty good defender. Pretty good movement shooter. The shot hasn't been perfect, but I think you've seen enough over it to say, yeah, it's not going to be a problem. You know, as he continues, he's still a very young guy. I believe just turned 19 years old and playing pretty high level basketball right now in pro overseas. So, but then you look at Soulon, and I struggle with him to a degree of just exactly what he is. I don't know if he's a wing. And I think that there's this possibility that, like, he's kind of a dunker spot guy on offense where he's a lob threat, he's a putback threat. And then defensively, he's certainly got the tools to be a guy who can defend, you know, I don't want to say 1 through 5 just because those guys are so rare, but we'll call it 2 through 4. He can really switch out on different guys and stay in front of guys pretty well. And it's for him, it's really all about the general development of his game and his offensive development, because I think he's a lot rawer of a prospect.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, than Richesay. So I hope that Soulon goes to a good development organization that's going to give him the time and the reps to, you know, really improve. Like, I've seen him in some mock drafts going to the Spurs at 8, and like, that is an excellent landing spot because he can just kind of play off of Wimby. And if they end up getting a point guard, which I'm sure they will, that'll kind of expedite and help that development. And obviously we know Pop has such a good track record with developing guys. And then as far as Richesay goes, he's not number one for me. I think he's probably going to be in like the second tier of this draft for me. If I believed more in the handle, I could see some of the top five, top three talk that he gets. I think that's the big swing skill between him being like a 3-and-D really nice rotation piece versus, okay, we have a real starter who can shoot, defend, and play make and create some off the dribble. And so that's really what it comes down to for me with Richesay, is like the dribble. You tell me the creation, the dribble, all that stuff hits, I'm in. That's a top five prospect in this class, no problem. If not, it's still a very good prospect, still probably a top 10 prospect, but you're just you're limiting kind of the upside there if he's just going to be a 3-and-D guy.
Yeah, I think the self-creation, as you said, is what kind of course why I have a lot of questions with taking him at the top of the draft. I just think that what you've seen so far, like I said, he's still really young, but I think that's what kind of scares me about him being a top two, top three pick, is I think that limits his ceiling. If he's not going to be a guy that can improve that handle, like you said, and be able to create more, and he just ends up being a catch-and-shoot guy, I think, like you said, could still be a really good player, but not a player that I think you should take in the top two or three of a draft. Even in this draft,
right.
I think that would be big of a stretch. But like you said, man, I like Soulon. I just think I agree with you. I think Richesay's floor is better than Soulon. I think Soulon, if you're going to put, say, bust potential, which I don't think either one of them is going to be that, but I think if you're going to put that on either one of those guys, I think Soulon probably has more because he has more room to grow. I think he's rawer than Richesay. But I like his athleticism. Again, they do a lot of things similar, both long, both shoot well off of movement, both has link and get in passing lanes, tip of heads, things like that. So they both do a lot of things similar, almost the exact same size. I think they have Richesay listed at 6'9", 204, and I think Soulon 6'9", 203. So we'll get the official measurements on that pretty soon. But, I mean, I think they're very similar prospects. I don't know if I would have that much space in between them as you see it in most mock drafts, but I understand why Richardson is higher, because I think, again, he's farther along. Moving on, man, when you look at that, kind of the point guards in this draft, you have Nikola Topic, who is widely projected to be the first point guard off the board. He's had some knee injuries. I think that's kind of could be a concern there for some teams. You also have Reed Shepard. You have Stephon Castle. You have Rob Dillingham. Those are kind of the four guys you're looking at that point guard position. And this draft is crazy. Like, I don't know, covering the draft for years, this might be the most polarizing draft that I've ever seen, because you just don't know where guys are going to go. Usually there's more of a consensus. I mean, you look at these mock drafts and they're all over the place. I mean, you might find Reed Shepard, for instance. I'm looking at Tankathon right now. They have him there at 3. I've seen him down at 9, 10. Same thing with Rob Dillingham. You see him in the top 5. You also see him down 11 and 12 in some mocks. Stephon Castle is a guy that I really like. And he measured out it pretty much. He'd be 6'7" with shoes on, 2'10". He's kind of come out and said that he is only not going to work out for teams that have an established point guard. And I kind of think he's painting himself into a box there. At that size, man, he can play on the floor with, say, just for instance, the Grizzlies. He could play on the floor with Ja Morant. I mean, we've seen Ja Morant play off the ball at times with Tyus Jones when they go really small. You're talking about a guy that's 6'7". I mean, 2'10". He's bigger than Vince Williams Jr. He's bigger than Desmond Bane as far as height, close to the weight. I just think he's kind of limited himself. I don't think I would have come out and said that. I think it could help hurt his draft spot, but but I also think there's a really good chance that San Antonio takes him at 4, and it doesn't really matter. But to kind of talking about those guys, Reed Shepard, Nikola Topic, Stephon Castle, Rob Dillingham, what are your thoughts on kind of the point guards at the top of this draft?
Yeah, I'll start with Castle. Huge fan, and I don't understand the advice, whoever has given him this advice, of just saying that, you know, he's not going to work out for teams that have point guards and he's a point guard.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah, like, I understand that is his preferred position, and I think that some of that comes from the fact that, you know, and he even said, or at least alluded to this, that he took a reduced role at UConn to better the team and to, you know, help them win a national championship this past year. And now this is his career and he wants to be a point guard. And I understand that. But to your point, say the Grizzlies end up with Stephon Castle at 9. I think not only could he play on the same floor with Ja, I think you could play Ja, Bane, and Stephon Castle and be just fine defensively. You know, I think that because that's a concern, right? I think it gets a little hairy when you start to talk about, hey, Desmond Bane is going to have to guard small forwards. Well, I truly believe Stephon Castle can guard small forwards very early on in his NBA career. So, I think some of that stuff is probably a little overblown, because at the end of the day, if a team likes you, they're going to draft you. Yeah. Exactly. They're just going to draft you, and there's nothing you can do about it. And you're going to be a good professional, and you're going to help the team however you can. Right. I think some of it's overblown, but bad advice. Whoever's advising Stephon Castle, don't stop, please. He can do a lot of different things. That's what makes him such an interesting prospect. Touch on Topic real quick too. Topic. I've got to get out of the topic.
I just called it as well.
I know. I Americanize it. It's Topic, I think. So I'll try to be right. Really interesting guy. Like, you mentioned the knee injury, and that's really the big concern, that and the jump shot. But, like, legitimate advantage creator, huge guy too. I believe listed about 6'5 with a 6'11 wingspan. That's a massive point guard. And I think he's another guy that you can play with a smaller guard and be just fine on the defensive end. Going to be really good in pick and rolls, really just kind of your, like, classic, what you think of, like, a European point guard. Exactly. Get paint touches, work the pick and roll, find the open guy, just really, really solid guy. I'm high on him. Two Kentucky guys are, they're great. I mean, they're really electric to watch. Dillingham is, he had maybe the most important measurement at the combine, because I think there were some concerns that is he even 6 feet tall without shoes on? And he came in at over 6'1", which is fine. You know, you put shoes on, you're 6'2", that's great. You can play in the NBA. You know, there was Mark Sears from Alabama who was under 5'11" without shoes.
Yeah.
There's just not many guys that size that stick in the NBA. So good measurement for him. I love watching Rob Dillingham play. I mean, just definition of a hooper.
Man, it's electric, man.
Electric.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it gets wherever he wants, can get any shot off at any time. Sometimes that gets him in trouble. You know, you kind of have to rein it in at times. But at the end of the day, he's so talented, and you want that guy taking as many shots as possible. If he's, you know, if he's 6'3", 6'4", he's probably got a really good chance to go number one in this draft. But
no question. I've said that exact same thing many times.
Yeah. Yeah, and the size is kind of what gets you. Shepherd, man, another one that if it wasn't for the size, he's probably a top three guy in this class and may end up going top three in this class regardless. But legitimate just sniper from wherever he is on the floor, off the catch, off the dribble. He can get his own shot a little bit, like really, really just explosive offensive player. And then you couple that with the defensive playmaking, like really active hands, generates steals, even generates some blocks, despite being pretty small.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Like, I really, really enjoy watching both the Kentucky guards play. And of course, you know, our old friend John Calipari decided to bring them both off the bench, which was always hilarious. But yeah, I mean, it's a really good point guard class. I'd even throw one more guy in there, and Isaiah Collier from USC. I think he's going to be, similar tier with those guys for me. Just like pit bull, get to the paint, uses his physical body to create advantages. Really, really good year if you need a point guard or a combo guard that could start with your point guard.
Yeah, man. And going back to Castle, man, I was already a huge fan watching him at UConn this year. And his measurements came in when he's like I said, with shoes on, he's going to be close to 6'7". And that just kind of blew me away because I didn't think he was that big.
Right.
If his offense comes around, like he's going to be elite defensively. I don't have any question. Like you said, I think he'll be able to guard 1, 2, and 3 with no issue. And that's why I think painting himself in a box of I'm just a point guard, I think it's kind of a mistake there, because I think he can play on the court with pretty much anybody in a backcourt. 1, 2, 3, I think you could plug him in with both teams and not have any problems there. But if that jump shot comes around, man, I think he could end up being, you could look up 2, 3, 4 years from now and he ends up being the best player out of this class. Like, I think he has that type of talent. I think the offense and the jump shot is kind of the only question. But that length and that size at the point guard position and wherever he plays, I think that's going to translate. But I don't think there's any question. With Topic, like you said, man, Topic is a tremendous playmaker, man. Just the epitome, like you said, of what a European point guard is, what you expect to see from those type of guys. And I think he's going to be a really good player in this league for a long time. And you could definitely see him going to San Antonio. They love those European prospects. And I think he would fit really well in that offense along with Wemby, because they need a real point guard, man. And having a guy that size when you're already have a lot of size and length on that team, man, I think that could be a lethal combination for years to come. So I could definitely see him ending up with Pop in that San Antonio system. But the next thing I want to tackle has been a big polarizing kind of conversation, definitely here in Grizz Nation. It's been a conversation, and it's been a conversation overall when it comes to Donovan Clingan versus Zach Edey. I was a big Donovan Clingan guy. I'm not anybody that follows me on Twitter knows I'm not a big Zach Edey guy at all. I'm not a big believer in him translating. And I was surprised. I'm going to be honest about the athletic stuff at the combine, because I thought Clingan would test better, and Zach Edey pretty much beat him across the board. And it's weird because different people could look at film and see something completely different. Because when I watch Donovan Clingan on film, he looks more mobile and nimble to me than Zach Edey. Zach Edey, his movements, I don't know. I don't even know how to frame it. It's more mechanical to me. It just seems
right.
I don't know. Donovan Clingan looks to move with more ease to me. Even though Clingan Edey might be faster technically. I feel like Clingan's movements feel more NBA-like to me, so to speak. I know that might not make a lot of sense, but that's the way that I see it. I just think when it comes to Edey, when you look at his role at Purdue, I mean, he's a guy that pretty much everything was run through him. I mean, you get to get the ball in the paint, he's scoring. And when you get to the NBA, that's not going to be his role. Like, no team is going to set up their offense around Zach Edey, and that's what he's used to doing. And I think that's going to be a big transition for him. How does he kind of get out of that? Because that's not going to be his role at all, I don't think, in the NBA, man. And I saw that you said you come around a little bit on Zach Edey. What are your thoughts on both of those guys in comparison?
Yeah, so start with Edey. I was 100% with you where I didn't get it. I don't thought it was gimmicky. No one's going to sit there and post him up, you know, every other possession. He's not going to get all these touches. That's a bygone NBA. You know, you don't see that anymore. And we've figured out that there's a more efficient way to play basketball. But I think where I came around on him is you look at, I think what I focused on initially was what he can't do. And I tried my best, and I try to do this with guys I can't get there, you know, just can't fully come around on. All right, what do they do well? What are my blind spots? What am I not seeing? And so what I came around on with Edey is, number one, he has outlier elite conditioning for a guy who is his size. He handled a massive workload, played extremely heavy minutes, and very rarely came off the court. And that is, frankly, a question with Donovan Clingan. His minutes are much lower than Zach Edey's. And Edey, you know, didn't really have problems with foul trouble, just did a really good job of basically touching the ball every possession and being put in a lot of defensive actions and was able to stay on the floor at all times. But then you look at his skills. I think he's going to be elite at two things in the NBA right off the bat. One is setting screens. He's just so ginormous that he's going to be able to set very effective screens very early. And I think we've seen enough of the movement that he can be useful in some pick and roll stuff. I think a big swing for him, swing skill, is going to be, you know, the playmaking out of the short roll. Like once they find him on a pick and roll and he can't finish, can he make a read and find an open guy? That's something we saw Jaren. I mean, it's taken him 5 years to get to the point where he's really comfortable finding the open man off of a short roll and not just, you know, throwing something up that has no chance of ever going in. But two is the rebounding. I mean, the rebounding is incredible. The numbers are completely off the charts, and he's going to do that on both sides of the ball. So I think just those three things, if he, you know, never wears down, sets elite screens, and rebounds the ball at an elite level, that can get you on the floor in the NBA and play, you know, 15 minutes a game, worst case scenario. So I think I've started to buy the floor when I focused on, okay, maybe this isn't a superstar, a star, maybe this isn't even a starter, but I can see a rotation player in Zach Edey that I dismissed at least originally. So that's kind of my thoughts on him. I think the ceiling comes from, you know, how much does his offensive game develop in terms of the passing, in terms of, you know, some sort of touch on the jumper, improved footwork in the post, all that stuff. And then with Klingon, like, to me, this is pretty, like, cut and dry. Like, he is a drop big who is ginormous, who put up ridiculously elite defensive numbers, you know, blocked 12.6% of the shots that he faced, which is just, you know, off the charts, like Walker Kessler at Auburn type numbers. I agree with you. I think he's a much more fluid athlete than Zach Edey on tape, regardless of what any combine numbers say. I think you just watch them play basketball, and Edey does not move as well as Donovan Klingon does. And then I think Klingon's already got some of the passing that you hope eventually comes around for Edey. You know, touch, we'll see. He's not a great free throw shooter, so I question, like, you know, there's always the videos. We used to see it with Steven Adams, right? There's Steven Adams after practice making 10 threes in a row. Well, all right, that's great. You can do that in the gym, but doing it in the game is another thing. So I don't know if I buy that for Klingon, but I just think he has a much more obvious transition and fit in the NBA of like a Zubac or somebody like that, or a guy I mentioned earlier, Walker Kessler. And we have to remember he's like 3 or 4 inches taller than those guys too. So there's just an inherent advantage that happens with being significantly taller than basically everyone else on the floor. So I'm still clinging over Edey, but I have come around on Edey in the sense that I think he can be a role player, worst case scenario.
Yeah, with Klingon, like I said, like you said, his playmaking, I think, is what really like pops for me for him. We know what he does on the defensive end as far as rim protection and everything like that. But the playmaking, I mean, you watch some of the passes. I mean, you go back and look at some of that film, man. He is really dishing that thing, man. Some right. passes that you just don't see guys his size make. I mean, you got to touch on the offense. I kind of think Klingon has more in his offensive game. The free throw shooting thing for me is weird, because if you go back and look at his splits, like, he'll have games where he's perfect from the line. Like, I don't know. His form looks great. I don't know what is it. It's like, I don't know if it's a focus thing, because there are times where he'll hit 5 or 6 in a row, and then there are other times where, and it's not like he's bricking them. Like, most of the time when people are bad free throw shooters, you'll see them just like clanking. Like, he, most of his misses are in and out. I just think that can be fixed. I think he shot about 58%. I think you get him with NBA coaching and you work on that. I think he can be an upper 60s guy. And I know, like you said, we've seen, I used to watch Ahmed Adadi, even in pregame, standing out there, hit 13, 14 threes in a row, gets in the game, has no touch, even at the rim. So you do see that. And him and Edey both shot the ball well from three at the combine. But I kind of think that Klingon does have some expansion in the offensive game. I mean, there were times where you would see him, he'd want to take that shot at UConn. He'd be at the top of the key, and then he'd think better of it and pass it out. But the few times that he did let it go, man, it looks good. I really do think there's some expansion to his offensive game. We'll see, but that's the reason why I like him over Edey. I feel like the ceiling for Klingon is higher, because I feel like you can expand some. I feel like with Edey, more of what you said about the just warm-up shots, I feel like the three from Edey is more of that than it is with Klingon. We'll see, but I've seen Klingon moving around on movement shooting on workouts, and it looks good to me. So I've always felt like kind of at UConn, they kind of held him back some of his offensive game. But that's going to be an interesting thing to watch play out because the pro ED fans don't get why. I mean, he beats Klingon at the combine. He put up better numbers than Klingon, and he had these historic numbers, and he's still significantly behind Klingon in mock drafts, and they don't get it. And I keep explaining, man, the reason why is no matter what those combine numbers say, man, I still feel like Klingon moves better than him. Some people, and it's like that I'm crazy for saying that. They watch the film and they think Edie moves better. I just don't see that, man. But again, we're talking with Chip Williams Jr. here on our Ethos Grizzlies podcast. Though we're running a little bit long here, man. So I'm gonna try to put a bow on this real quickly here. One prospect that's getting a lot of buzz here in Grizz Nation is Dalton Connect out of Tennessee. I'm a big fan of his. He's older prospect, gonna be 23 years old on draft night. Might be the oldest prospect in the draft. I haven't really done the research on the age thing, but he might be the oldest prospect in the draft. And you don't see a lot of guys projecting a lottery at his age, man. He's got about 6'7", shoes, 212 pounds, put up one of the best players in college basketball, man, can really score, but played a little bit of bully ball, man, forcing the way to get to the basket, strong. I'm a big fan of his, especially for a team like the Grizzlies who could use someone that can help immediately. And I think day one, he's a rotation player. I don't think there's any question with him. I mean, I think the shooting is going to translate. He shot about 30-40% from three, pretty good rebounder. But I think he has some playmaking upside. And for a guy his age, usually you would think that guy was a finished product, but even at 23 years old, when I look at the prospects in this draft, I think as far as ceilings are concerned and what these players could be, I could foresee a scenario where he is borderline all-star type guy. I think young Gordon Hayward type player. I could definitely see that for him. I'm a big fan of his, and I just think he has one of the safest floors in this draft. I don't think there's any question he's not going to be a bust. At worst, he's going to be a rotation player that can come in and knock down threes. Well, what are your thoughts on Dalton Connect out of Tennessee?
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Yeah, he was definitely another guy that kind of had some eye popping numbers at the combine. You know, I think he posted a 39
vertical. Yeah, the vertical was really good.
Measured in at like 6'6", 6'9" wingspan. Like, he is legitimately NBA wing sized. And I agree with the age concerns. I think that age is probably one of the more, underrated aspects when evaluating prospects, because, you know, it's, you have to grade on a curve when you're talking about a guy who's, you know, over 23 years old versus a guy who is 18 or 19, right? You're just, your development as not only a basketball player, but a person, your body, just all of that just changes so much over those 4 or 5 years. And so you go back and look at the history of older prospects, and it's a mixed bag. I mean, some of them work, some of them don't. And it's pretty rare that a guy comes into the NBA his age and turns into a star. In fact, there's very few examples of it. But I think that he can be a rotation player very early on, and probably will stick in the NBA for a long time, because he's a very good shooter. He's proven that he can shoot off of movement. He can shoot off of curls. He can shoot off pin downs. You know, obviously you can't leave him open for a standstill catch and shoot. A little bit of stuff off the dribble, not as much, like, to get to that Gordon Hayward type ceiling. You know, I think he's going to have to, add some more to his dribble package. Just wasn't asked to do it a ton, but the little times he showed it, I think you'd like to see the athleticism show up more, a little bit more explosion with his first step, being able to get by guys. And so, you know, that's stuff that we'll just see how it develops, because it's going to be important that, you know, when he faces hard closeouts in the NBA, can he take a couple dribbles and get to a mid-range, or get all the way to the basket, find a teammate, stuff like that. You know, just how well-rounded does his game become? But the shot, the scoring, I see no issues with that. And I think just calling him even a shooter is probably doing a disservice, because he really does score, on and off ball. So, and he did it, we're having this discussion 10, 12 years ago. The SEC is just not that good of a basketball conference. Well, obviously the SEC over the last decade has just had tons and tons of money dumped into basketball. You've got elite coaches, elite prospects, and elite college players playing in the SEC every year. And he was the best player in the SEC this past year. So that absolutely means something, because, you know, every game teams knew going in, hey, Rick Barnes wants this guy to go out there and lead the line for them and score as much as he can.
Yeah, and I was going to say, and that's another thing, is under Rick Barnes, you don't usually see guys put up those type of numbers. Like, when you look at prospects out of Tennessee, they usually average 10, 11 points a game. You don't usually see guys, they're more of a, have more of a team concept. And that's another thing that was super impressive for me, man. You got a guy averaging 22 points a game on a Rick Barnes. That's just not something that you see. You have to go back to Kevin Durant or something before to see a guy in his system kind of score like that. So that kind of lets you know what he thought of him. You talk about being the best player in the SEC. That really means something. And again, you don't see guys his age going in the lottery. So I think that is shows you that people feel like he is a special player. And like you said, I don't want to paint him in that box as a shooter at all. Like, I've talked to people about that, man. They try to put him on the box. Well, he's a shooter. No, he's a scorer. Like, he really can score from all three levels. He's an interesting prospect. And again, for a team like Grizzlies, if they're sitting there at 9 and they don't move out of that pick, and Klingon is gone, a couple of guys are gone, I think I would give him a real serious look. Because, again, I think he's a player that could come into your rotation and play day one and help you for a team that has designs on being a playoff team, a championship contender that's going to make a run. I think there's definitely some value in a guy that you know that has a safe floor that's going to be able to come in and be productive for you. But, again, man, we're running a little bit long, man. Who are some of the prospects outside of the lottery that you like, maybe in that lower tier first round, early second round? Who are some of the guys you like there?
Okay, I'll run through a couple real quick. Jalen Tyson out of Cal will probably be a top 15 guy for me. Just on ball, kind of a big guard, but really is going to be a wing in the NBA. I'm a huge fan of him. Isaiah Crawford out of Louisiana Tech, another one of these, honestly, the closest thing we've probably seen to a Vince Williams type prospect since Vince Williams, small school, but just an absolute menace on defense, and then also carried the offensive load for him. Really, really like him. Baylor Shireman out of Creighton, I think is being overlooked a little bit. That's a shooter. That's a genuine knockdown shooter.
And he rebounds well, man. He averages close to 10 a game. That's huge. That, I mean, that just shows you the effort and the dog that he plays with, man, for a guy his size to be average 10 rebounds, man. That's even more than the shooting. That's what's really impressive to me, man. I'm a big fan of his, so.
Yep. I'll give you a couple more. I've got Jamal Shedd from Houston.
Yeah.
A little bit undersized, but just you talk about like a, you know, a Miles McBride with the Knicks, or the guy with the Pacers, TJ McConnell.
TJ McConnell.
Like, yeah, one of these just like backup absolute dog point guards, going to defend you like crazy, be able to run an offense successfully. I'm very high on Jamal Shedd. And then a guy that is one of the few notables that has worked out for the Grizzlies at this point, Jonathan Mogbo from San Francisco.
Yeah.
Kind of like he, I guess for people, and I understand probably not a lot of people have watched a ton of Jonathan Mogbo. He played at San Francisco. But I think the quick pitch on him, at least from a Grizzlies perspective, is similar to like a Brandon Clark, except if Brandon Clark basically played point forward at Gonzaga. So a lot of interesting tools with him. He came in too with a 9-foot standing reach, which is kind of the threshold you want for guys to be. You want them to have at minimum 9-foot standing reach to be able to be a legitimate presence down low, you know, possibly play the five, be able to protect the rim. And he hit that threshold, which was big for him. So yeah, I mean, I could probably sit here and name like 5 or 6 other guys. I really, really like this late first round into the second round. I think there's some really good players there, but I'll give you those 5. I think those would be probably my favorite 5 guys in that range.
Yeah, man. I was on Twitter trying to think of some guys, man. I ended up with a list of about 20 guys that I like in the bottom first into the bottom of the second round. There's just so much talent in this draft. I mean, you mentioned Jalen Tyson. I'm a big fan of his as well, man. 20 points, 7 rebounds, man. Really good rebounder for the guard position. Good passer. I mean, does everything well. Shot 36% from 3. Just really good player out there at Cal. I know a lot of people don't watch a lot of Pac-12 basketball, but, I mean, he's a tremendous prospect. I think who else did you mention? Mogbo, like you said, out there in San Francisco. I saw a couple of his games. I watched, I think, both times they played Gonzaga. And he really popped at that point for me. You talk about that 9-foot stand and reach. I think he's definitely a player that's going to stick in the league. I think he's going to be a really good player as well. I mean, there's just so many players. I could name 20 players that I like. In the bottom of this draft, but I've done enough of me talking, man. I like to let my guests, man, kind of get off and talk their stuff and their knowledge. That's the reason why you bring them on, man. So I don't want to continue to talk about what I like on here. So, but yeah, man, good stuff, man. But before we get out of here, I want to ask you kind of about the Jared Allen stuff. He's been connected to the Grizzlies. That's been a prospect or rumors that they could be possibly attempting to trade for him. What do you think about his fit with the Grizzlies and his fit next to Jared?
It's very interesting. I mean, I think, you know, on paper, it makes a ton of sense where you have this guy who's kind of this rim runner, rim protector, you know, lob threat, dunker spot that will allow Jaren to kind of roam on both ends. And I think we saw he won Defensive Player of the Year when he was able to really be, you know, maybe the best help side defender in the NBA, blocking shots, creating steals, you know, hard hedging on guys, switching on to guys when needed. And so it gives you that sense of comfort that, you know, if Jaren goes and chases something and maybe it doesn't work, there's Jared Allen there to help protect the rim. And then he doesn't really need the ball on offense to be effective. He can just be, you know, a screener, like I said, kind of dunker spot, lob threat guy. It makes a ton of sense. I am very interested to see what ends up shaking out with the assistant coach and just maybe the general philosophical changes that go on with the Grizzlies. I've been led to somewhat believe that they may be moving away from, you know, your traditional big, and maybe they turn the keys over to Jaren and he's the center, and, you know, they want to put guys who can really handle the ball on the floor. I don't know. You know, I really don't know. I'm fascinated to see what direction they take this offseason, because like I said, when you just talk about, you know, team fit and the traditional, you know, basketball sense, I think Jared Allen is like the perfect piece you could put with the Grizzlies. But is that the way they want to go? I just don't think we know that yet. And then the last thing I would say on that, I am for getting a high level center, but I would not kind of empty the asset basket on a center, because I think you can find centers who can play well with Jaren, because Jaren is such a scalable player. He can play next to tons of different profiles. I think you can find a guy to play with and start with him without having to give up a ton of future assets. And so that will also be an interesting piece to me. Do they look to do the big trade for like a Mikal Bridges or something like that, and just say, hey, we're going to roll with basically Jaren at the five and a bunch of wings and Ja Morant? And like, I just don't know. I'm kind of speculating here, but we'll see. It's really fascinating. I think we're in for an interesting offseason. My one prediction would be that I don't think Luke Kennard's going to be on the roster, because I think his contract is just too easy to trade. And he makes sense. And like, you know, all the targets that they've been linked with, his contract makes the most sense going back the other way.
Yeah, that 100%. I mean, if they make a deal, it's about a 99% chance Luke Kennard will be involved. I think Luke Kennard and if you got to expand that, Marcus Smart are kind of the two contracts right there that you look at if they're going to make any semi-significant move. I think though, Luke Kennard first, and I think Marcus Smart second, if they really try to do something a little bit bigger, I think those are the two guys you're looking at. And I agree, it's going to be interesting to see which direction they go as far as the offense. If you kind of listen to Zach Kleiman at the end of that end of season presser, it seems like he's okay with Jared at the center. I mean, even went so far as to say, I feel like we're at our best when Jared's at the center, and maybe they want to play that five out style. I think you'll be fine with that in the regular season. I question, can you win big in the playoffs playing five out? That's
right.
The question for me. I'm more of a guy that I feel like they need a guy, Jared Allen type guy. And I don't think it is necessarily, as you said, it has to be that level. Like Nick Richards is a name that a lot of Grizzlies fans have brought up that could be a little bit cheaper target that you don't have to empty the clip or anything to go get a guy like that. I think you could bring in a guy like that, maybe draft a center as well, or bring in some depth pieces. I think there are other routes that you can go and not necessarily go big game hunting like getting a Jared Allen. So it's going to be interesting to watch that play out. But last question here, man, who you got tonight? Does Dallas close this thing out? Or does Minnesota force a game six?
Ooh, good question. I'll say Minnesota forces a game six and Dallas wins it in six. That we're going to get a Dallas-Celtics final, which will be a ton of fun.
Yeah, we're definitely on the same page there is what I got. I think Minnesota finds a way to extend it tonight, and I think Dallas wins it back home. It looks like Derek Lively is going to be able to go tonight, so that's a big plus for the Mavericks, man, because they missed him in that last game. So it's going to be interesting, man. I'm excited for it again, but I think it's going to go six and definitely going to get that Dallas-Boston final. A lot of angles there with the Kristaps Porzingis. You got Kyrie going back to Boston, man. That should be a lot of fun, man. Yeah, that lot of should be a lot of fun, man. Going a lot of angles there, and it's high level matchup. I'm interested to see how that plays out, because I'm not a huge fan of Boston. I feel like talent wise they're there, and I think they rely on their talent too much. They don't have that killer instinct, and I think that comes from the top. Like Jason Tatum is just kind of a blasé guy. He just doesn't seem to change. Like he's pretty much always the same, no matter what the situation is. Super talented. I just don't know if he has that killer instinct. And it seems like that kind of spills over to the rest of the team, because you kind of watch these series and they always have a game or two where they're just kind of lose to these inferior teams, you kind of scratch your head like, why are they losing these games? And it's just because the other team plays so much harder and seems to have more heart than them. But that's going to be interesting. I think that's an intriguing matchup. I don't think anybody had Dallas in the finals. I think coming to this season, those two moves they made near the deadline with P.J. Washington and Daniel Gafford, I think huge. Huge for that team, man. It kind of changed things for them. And I that's one of the kind of things I'd like to see for the Grizzlies, man. Just be aggressive when you have the opportunity to kind of tweak your team. There have been times where I felt like there were probably opportunities for the Grizzlies to kind of supplement their core, and they just kind of stuck with what they have, man. So you have an opportunity to go for it. I think that's a huge example of kind of going for it, and it's really paid off for them as they're looking to be poised to go to the NBA Finals and possibly win a title this year. And I don't think anybody had that at the beginning of the season. But before I completely wrap it up here, man, I want to touch on this a little bit, man. And NBA community, the basketball community in the world, man, lost a legend this week. Bill Walton passed away, I think at the age of 71 from cancer. And obviously it was before my time, but when I say legend, it's not just what he did on the basketball court. And for that matter, he's a Hall of Famer. So that kind of shows you about that, but it's philanthropic work, activism as far as civil rights and different government issues that weren't popular at all at that time, especially for a guy in his position, man, stepped out on a limb and really stood on business, man, when it came to stuff like that, man. So he made great contributions to the world. You talk about him in post-career, commentating, just fantastic. So a big-time loss, man, for the basketball community, like I said, the world, man. So condolences to the family and friends of Bill Walton, man. I just wanted to touch on that before we get out of here, man. But I really want to thank Chip Williams for joining me, man. Again, man, if you're looking at draft, you want to talk about the Grizzlies, man, you can find him on Twitter at Chip Williams Jr. Great guy to follow, man. Really knows his stuff. And again, I appreciate his time. You can find me on Twitter at Isaac_NBA. You can find my co-host Candace Hagans on Twitter at CandaceH901. We're going to be back next week with an episode. We're going to be collaborating with William from the All Rookie Podcast, also on the Ethos Grizzlies Network. So make sure you're on the lookout for that. We're going to be talking draft again there. Lots of draft stuff, man, coming up in the next couple of weeks as this thing gets closer and closer. Less than a month away, man. Again, I'm excited. I don't like the idea of them doing two nights. I think that's going to be a mistake. We'll see how it works out, but I think they're going to get less ratings on that second night. I think when you have it on the same night, us draft diehards and diehard fans, we're going to watch the whole thing. But for people that are kind of casual, they're going to watch the first round, and the second round is going to be on a Saturday night. They're not coming back watching the second round on a Saturday night. I think the NBA is making a mistake there. It's kind of going to that NFL model. See how it works out. I got a feeling they're going to go back to one day after they see how this plays out. But, again, thanks to Chip Williams Jr. Make sure you go over to Ethos Grizzlies. Give us a like and a follow. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And until next time, we're gone.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.